There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 922, January 24th. 2022, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Very happy to say less than 30 days and 30 nights before Formula One cars are making noise and showing their legs in Montmelo, in the land of machismo. Back to you, El Jefe.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Sebastian Loeb takes his eighth Monte Carlo rally win. Max says that LCH got really lucky with that dominant team from 2014 on and seven championships. Will 2009 rear its interesting, ugly head all over again? And NASA returns from the roar. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, Mr. Rogers, you know what they say, don't get mad, get even. And what you just said, that Max thinks Lewis got lucky. Anybody who thinks Lewis is lucky, I think they have a chip on their shoulder.
Oh, that chipita. We're not talking Frito-Lay.
No, we're talking Herman Lay's.
Glory, glory be.
Yeah, it's sea salt and vinegar chips, my favorite.
Well, it was bound to happen, Nasser. You know, other people listen to this podcast, and I have let Lady Luck out of the bag.
Yes. And, you must be happy with Sebastian Loeb, man. Very impressive. And what about those Niners, man?
Absolutely. Niners taking down the anti-vaxxers. We've got Loeb telling everybody, it's not just about Brady, I'm old too. I mean, he's 48 years old, and now M Sport are relishing the fact that he's going to stick around for more rallies this season. So Loeb is, you know, once again, those special athletic diets keep these guys' tickers ticking away, just like a little Timex watch.
Yes, sir. Very impressive. And he was second in the Dakar Rally, if I remember correctly.
Correcto.
Yeah, so that's very. But you know, Mr. Rogers, life is so beautiful these days. Dakar Rally started on the 1st of January. And this past weekend, the Formula Regional, which is now the new name for Formula 3 in different parts of the world, Formula Regional Asia and UAE Formula 4 started their season in Yas Marina, and they're going to have five race weekend back to back, and we're going to have motor racing all the way till December. So who could ask for anything more? So I am totally elated, and there was a lot of action. Most of these races are available on YouTube, and the Kansas City Chiefs game with the Bills, that was as intense as the Brazilian Grand Prix of last year. Really, really enjoyed these games. So what else is new on the left coast, sir?
Oh, no, but I agree with you. When it's playoffs, you get fantastic American football, and you're absolutely right. The Bills, unfortunately, all got a free copy from Isaac Hayes.
Yes, and I'm sure you remember the name Scott Norwood.
My favorite.
Yes, anytime Bills are threatening to go into the Super Bowl, that's the name that comes to my mind. And I was watching that game.
Bravo, prego. Well, I was just going to hear, if you heard the rumors, it's really affected a lot of people the way Alain Prost has left Renault or Alpine. But the good news is there's a rumor that El Machismo's buddy's coming back, Flavio.
Well, I saw a picture of Flavio and Nando sitting in some fancy Monte Carlo restaurant. Looks like it was a recent photo. But if he comes back, which team is he coming back with? That's what I want to know.
It's probably going to be, something interesting like Haas.
Yes, because, you know, he's not going to fit in well with Toto or the powers that be at Ferrari now. And I don't think there's room for him at Alpine.
But I would love to just be in the room when Christian Horner starts complaining about him.
But, sir, more good news is we have the magic numbers are 23, 24, 25. And that is in the month of February, which is not too far away, when the first of two preseason testing begins in Barcelona. Some are predicting one of the teams will come up with their own version of Braun GP, trick up their sleeve, like the double diffuser. And others are saying some will get it very wrong. And just for information's sake, the second test will be in Bahrain from March 10th till the 12th. What I say, Mr. Roger, is this. Scenery at the front will be pretty much the same. Red Bull versus Mercedes. Max versus the Quiet Storm. I have a feeling Ferrari and McLaren will be mixing with the big boys. Mixing but not beating them, at least this season. And I hope I am wrong, which will be very good for the sport. The thing that is of interest to me is this, the intra-team rivalry. Focus will be on two Brits at the Brackley-based Mercedes team. George Russell will be more like what Ricciardo was to Max if the hype around him lives up to be reality on racetracks around the world, which again would be fantastic for Formula One. George definitely will not be Hemi's Pierre Gasly or his lab chihuahua like Valtteri. Now, I would like to get your opinion as to what do you think will happen between these two, especially if Lewis Hamilton comes back and looking for number 8. I think he will come back, but, you know, just my opinion. He knows better. What say you on these two issues?
Well, he will come back for sure. I mean, that we're not worried about here at F1Weekly.com. But I think Russell will be taken aside. Toto will talk to him. And we'll just simply say, we are a classy outfit. I don't want any of this Nico Rosberg kind of attitude. I want you to continue the Bottas method of number 2. Just at the beginning, try to keep things calm so we don't see frayed hair and freaking out right at the very beginning of the season. So I think Toto is going to take him aside and tell him that we need to do this on a gradual basis because he is a 7-time world champion and deserves the respect of that title.
You know, respect goes out the cockpit the moment the lights go off. Now, if George Russell can be on the podium in the first 9 races, and if he starts out qualifying LCH on a regular basis by 0.2, 0.3, then you know what's going to happen. The team will move towards the new lucky driver. I don't think it's going to happen right off the bat, but hey, I've been wrong before, so more power to George Russell, so we will see how it works out. Now, here is a power of positive thinking for Hemi haters. What if GR does a JB as new teammate to LCH? Remember, Button got 2 wins at McLaren before LCH got 1 when they became teammates? Now, if that happens, there will be ground-shaking celebrations from San Ho to Oviedo. Do you agree with me, sir?
I do agree with you. I just don't see it happening. Not only that, but we're talking about completely different eras, people. Now we're talking about Sir LCH. You know, he's had many, many victories. He's now a legend. So things change. People's mindset change. Hence the quiet staying away from everyone and watching Run Silent, Run Deep. So we'll see what happens, but it's going to be very interesting because it's definitely not the same Lewis Hamilton as Jenson Button's teammate, but he's still a bloke, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to be very, very interesting, but everything changes, is evolving. We're morphing into a whole new F1 scene with the new cars. Everything is changing, including the attitude and the motivation. So it's going to be very interesting. Everything is going to be so interesting. The nuance, the cigarette butts in the bathroom, it's all going to be the reading of the tea leaves.
Oh dear, that's good. Okay, now moving on to the other big team, Red Bull. Sergio Perez is also experiencing positive feelings, saying he believes he can be world champion at Red Bull. And that's fantastic. I think any good driver can be world champion at the Dr. Marco-operated abattoir, but only under one condition, and that is as long as they don't have the raging Dutch bull as their Red Bull teammate. Now, I say, if Adrian Newey can provide Max with a car that rides like the wind, and Honda keep their, underline the word, F1 engine fast and reliable, as it was last season, then I think it will be smooth sailing for him, especially if LCH decides to hang out in LA and not seek number 8. Do you think Sergio Perez can beat Max Verstappen as teammate in a normal fair fight? See or no?
No, of course not. Max is so machismo that... But it's a pleasant thought. And really, it's the right attitude to have at Red Bull. They want him to believe that. It's important that he feels that he is number 1 3/4.
Number 1 3/4, huh? Very good. Very good. Okay, now we're moving on to Ferrari. The prancing horse really needs to perform like Ali Sheba, as Reds must win races and championships soon. It is a magical name in the annals of motor racing history. I don't know if they will have the car to mount a championship challenge all season long, but I am expecting and predicting win numero uno for Carlito. Do you think that will happen, sir?
It will. I think Ferrari is going to perform. I think they feel good about it. And it's good for F1 if Ferrari does well. Let's hope they do well and there's no funny business.
Yes, sir. Now we come to what you mentioned earlier, Le Professor pouncing on Laurent Rossi. This is really not good. Alain Prost spoke of his recent ousting from Alpine, claiming that the team CEO, Laurent Rossi, wanted all the spotlight to himself. This in simple corporate world is known as burning bridges. He said, and I quote, "I wasn't involved in decision making anymore. I sometimes disagreed completely, but I had to keep conveying the official word," end quote. Now, he is complaining that even though he was a member of the board, he would find out about decisions at the last minute and they were not really listening to him. And he further said, and I quote, "It's a matter of respect. Relationships have become more and more complicated. I could feel a lot of jealousy," end quote. And, you know, if you recall how Prost, when he raced for Renault in the 80s, they had a very fast car, but not very reliable, and he should have won the 83 championship, but did not, lost it in the final round. And that departure from the team was also not on very happy ground. So I'm very sad to see that this is happening again. And according to Mr. Prost, he's not looking for a job, but he will listen if somebody wants to say something to him. How do you make of that, sir?
Well, he's trying to be cordial, and he is a four-time world champion. And I think they should have done it in a classier style or fashion, even though if it was insincere, fine. But be cool, man. You got to be cool.
Okay, now, talk is cheap. Zak Brown, the man from SoCal, now in charge at McLaren, has revealed that the team had discussions with the Volkswagen group, but they have an agreement to use Mercedes engine till new engine formula is introduced in 2026. According to him, nothing has been agreed with the VW group, but he stated that he believes their Porsche brand is looking to do a deal with Red Bull. And some English magazine had pretty much stated that Audi has agreed to buy out McLaren Formula One operation, and which was denied by both parties. But there is so much of talk on this now, as my friend used to say, rumors are spread by management, that I have a feeling that one or two of the Volkswagen brands between Porsche and Audi may come into it. And Porsche has been linked with Red Bull for quite a while. And keep in mind, the guy he recruited, Mr. Andreas Seidel, he's a Deutschen Folk also, and he used to work at Porsche. He was in charge of the Le Mans program, and Nico Hülkenberg won the Le Mans with them. So I do see a very strong possibility of a engine from one of the VW group, or VW as they are known here in the US, powering the McLaren team. And, you know, it really goes back to what Ron Dennis said. In this day and age, if you want to win a championship, it cannot be done with a customer engine. And we can see how all engines are the same, but the two engines in the Mercedes cars are a little bit more equal than the others that are supplied to, or at least that's what the impression one gets, that are powering Williams and other teams. Your take on this, Senor?
Well, I still, like I said, I think it'd be great to see Volkswagen come into the sport. But right now, you know, the automotive industry is in a very strange transitional period. Not only that they cannot keep cars on the car lots right now because they can't produce them because there's parts issues. I think it would be great if we could get Porsche at Red Bull. That would be so cool. And I could see that combination working very, very well. I'm hoping this happens, but I'm not betting any money on it.
Okay, sir, in more fun news, Aero Man to Aston Martin. Red Bull has agreed to early release of Dan Fellows, which will allow him to join Aston Martin in April. Previously, they were saying they were going to hold him till his contract expires, which would have been a year or two. So there is some sanity in Formula One, so that's good. And of course, you know, a lot of people are moving from the engineering side from one team to another. So we may see some power shift in the power plants in Formula One this season. Sir, going back to Carlos Sainz Jr. winning his first Grand Prix, do you see any first-time Grand Prix winner this season apart from that? And the obvious is, of course, George Russell.
The obvious is George Russell. George Russell may get a win depending on Mercedes and how they come out of the box, whether they perform or not. I still am a believer that everybody will be looking at the back of Fernando Alonso in the Renault.
You know, their problem is, among others, they are the only team using their own engine, so they don't have a lot of data sharing from different sources. I think that's going to hurt them. And with all due respect to them and Viry Châtillon, I don't think that engine is on same par as Mercedes and Honda right now. So maybe people will be looking at the back of Alonso because he's so cute, but I don't think they will be. It will be very nice if they can challenge for the wins on a regular basis, but I don't see them as, I see McLaren and Ferrari more of a threat to Red Bull and Mercedes than Alpine or Haas. Somebody made a comment that things can shuffle so much that Haas may have the best car, which would be wonderful if Mick Schumacher starts winning races. But I think that's more of what somebody used to call pipe dream. What say you?
You know, you're absolutely correct. And, I mean, obviously, I'm rooting for Fernando because this is going to be his pretty much last year for me. Then it's over for all of us, and you'll be happy to just listen to his Suzuka comments every day to remind you of him. But yeah, he'll be gone pretty soon, and I was just hoping. And the biggest problem, guys, I mean, people don't maybe care, but if Renault doesn't perform well, I mean, they're going to leave the sport.
You know, speaking of his comment, there was one more important comment than Suzuka, and that was karma. Karma to me would be the all-time, it's even better than leave me alone, I know what I'm doing. And the real reason was, if he had said that with Michael Schumacher or Lewis or Sebastian Vettel retiring, I can understand that. But it was said for a guy who in a million years was not going to be a threat to him, Julian Palmer. And that to me is the real funny part, karma for Julian Palmer. But Nando is you know, you think I think he's a joke? Let me just tell you, anybody who dethrones Lewis Hamilton or Michael Schumacher or Jim Clark or Ayrton Senna, boy, they are as good as all these people, maybe more. And that's how I will remember Machismo. And, you know, the only good thing I am interested in him retiring, I never want to see, because I saw that with Graham Hill and Mario Andretti when he kept racing in his 50s. You never want to see the great legends struggling to get into the top 10 or top 5. You know what I'm saying? That's one thing. But the real beauty is, once he retires from Formula One, hopefully he will have 15 minutes. So F1 Weekly can have an interview with him. And that will be a very interesting interview, I tell you right now. I have most of my questions already prepared for him, believe it or not, as I have for some other drivers also. And it's just a matter of getting an opportunity to sit down and talk to him. I remember I once asked, you know, the guy who was with him, like his manager for duties on the track, I asked him, hey, if I come to Spain during the off-season, possible to do a 10-minute interview? And he wasted no time in saying to me no, which is fine, no problem there. I'd rather have a no than no answer. But we'll see. Well, our day will come, you know. Hopefully he'll come to America again, and maybe you can sit down and have some gazpacho with Machismo. Wouldn't that be nice? And I will definitely tell him as soon as we start that, with deep respect to him, both from you and me, we hardly use his name Alonso. We always refer to him as Machismo. And I'm going to let him know that. And of course, my favorite, muy macho hombre de España. I'm sure he will appreciate that.
Absolutely, Nasser. And speaking of gazpacho, I'm going to pull some out of the fridge and make a bowl for myself while we take a break. And we'll be back after these brief messages.
There's a holdup in the Bronx, Brooklyn's broken out in fights. There's a traffic jam in Harlem that's backed up to Jackson Heights. There's a scout troop short a child, Khrushchev's still red Idle Wild.
Car 54, where are you?
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And today we're going to go to the French Riviera, Monte Carlo Rally, Monaco. A very impressive win number 8 in this event for your homeboy, Sebastian Loeb, in his Ford Puma. His fellow Francais and namesake, Sebastian Ogier, was on his way to victory when his Toyota Yaris had a puncture, allowing the other Sebastian to slip by. And it's a new track record for Loeb as he becomes the oldest winner of a WRC event at the age of 47. And in the name of diversity and all inclusion, we race and rally as one. I'm very pleased to say his co-driver in this event was a 50-year-old French teacher, a lady by the name of Isabelle Galmiche. So that's some history right there also. Ogier was classified second with Craig Breen third in another Ford Puma. So I'm happy for Ford because, you know, at one time they were the biggest name in motorsports everywhere. And I'm glad M Sport is doing a very, what you call, outstanding job for them. So that's good. Now, Monte Carlo Rally historically has been one of the three major rallies, the other being the Acropolis in Greece and the Safari Rally in Kenya. I like all three events very much. So Monte Carlo was the opening round. Second event is the Rally of Sweden. Unfortunately, no WRC event in North or South America this year. I mean, lately, you know, they've been having the Rally Mexico. You know, one thing I don't like with all these, whatever the reasons are, you know, all these name Acropolis Rally, Finnish Rally was known as Rally of Thousand Lakes, Safari Rally, and the Ivory Coast Rally was known as Bandama Rally. Even the Tour de Corse, they call it Rally of France, Rally of Italy, Rally of Germany, Rally of Greece. Now, these original names are very nice. Just a personal opinion, sir. And sir, speaking of motor racing all season long, moi is going to Daytona this weekend for the Daytona 24 Hours. And there'll be Mario Andretti will be there, Bobby Rahal will be there. There are a lot of drivers there, so we'll see, you know, if I can get some interviews. Not sure what the COVID situation there is, but we'll see what we can do. Hopefully we'll salvage a few. Okay, sir, now we go to Yas Marina, Formula Regional Asia. As I said earlier, this is the name for what used to be Asian Formula 3 Championship. The opening race of the weekend, and all these races are on YouTube, folks, if anybody is interested. The opening race of the weekend was won by the second coming of Monty, meaning Sebastian Montoya, from pole position. Very impressive win. American Red Bull Jr. Jack Crawford from Texas qualified on the front row but stalled at the start. He fought back to finish 11th at the end of the race. Winner in race 2 was Brazilian Gabriel Bortoleto, and Mini Monty was 4th. Third and final race of the weekend was won by Italian Gabriel Mini, and Texas Ranger Jack Crawford was second. Gabriel Mini leads the championship with 43 points over Charles Leclerc's brother Arthur, who is on 40 points. Monty Jr. is 2 points behind in third. And Montoya was also there. And of course, he will be racing at Indy 500 also. That'll be interesting. Now, this was very interesting, the UAE Formula 4. There were four races over the weekend to start the season. First three races were won by Toto Wolff's next superstar, 16-year-old Italian Andrea Kimi Antonelli. But then the organizer says, hey, not so fast. He had a stellar karting career and was enrolled in the Mercedes Driver Academy in 2019. And I've been hearing this name for a few years, and he has been very, very good in karting, and I hope things work out for him in single-seater racing. Senor Rogers, it is interesting to note that three of the first Formula One championships were won by Italian drivers. And despite seeing the Express truly train and physical in Formula One, there has not been an Italian world champion since 1953. So hopefully this Italian Kimi will change that, which will be very good. Also taking part in the championship is the son of Alex Wurz, Charlie, and another son of an F1 legend, Brando Badoer. And if he does not start winning races soon, his career will be on the waterfront. And you know what happens there. For the winner of the third race, let me take a break so I can disclose his name. Let me try. Dasana Paul Intrapuvasak. Now, he got the win because Kimi Antonelli got a penalty, and that promoted Charlie Wurz to second, and then Kimi was third. Fourth and final race of the weekend was won by Taylor Bernard over Antonelli. The Italian now leads the championship with 85 points over Dasana Paul on 50 points. Any questions on this Formula 4 and Formula Regional Championship in Yas Marina?
No, but I'm happy for Toto. You know, he gets pretty excited.
Oh, Mr. Rogers, I have to share this, and I'm sharing this because I saw this. one of the races in the closing stages was came under caution and a safety car, and I did not see a last lap, a mad dash for cash. Maybe somebody did not get the Massey memo. These things happen. And it was at the same location, Yas Marina. Oink, oink. But these things happen. Okay, sir. Now we are coming to a goodie bag. Moments in motorsports history. This feature we will call Less is More. A look at championship winning drivers who had less wins than other drivers during the season. And it's not all the cases, but, you know, some of the more prominent ones. Okay, we should start with Mike Hawthorn. He was James Hunt of the 50s and sometimes raced in Formula One wearing a bow tie. There's a very famous picture of him in the Argentine Grand Prix, very close-up shot, wearing a red bow tie and driving a red Ferrari. Very impressive. In 1958, his only victory of the season was in the French Grand Prix. And when the season finale came to Casablanca, his English compadre, Stirling Moss, was like, "Here's looking at you, kid," as Mr. Motor Racing had four wins before the Moroccan Grand Prix. Moss was 8 points behind Hawthorn, who was on pole, and did all he could to become the first British world champion. Moss set the fastest lap in his van wall and won the race by almost a minute and a half. It was close, but still no couscous for Mr. Moss. Hawthorn finished second and took the title for Senior Ferrari. So that was the first British world champion, and tradition continues now with Mr. Hamilton. In this race, Phil Hill from Santa Monica, California was third, and there were two other American drivers in this race. Harry Schell and Meston Gregory, they finished fifth and sixth respectively. Three Americans in the top six of a Formula One race. Not bad. Okay, now we come to John Surtees. In 1964, Jim Clark had the most wins, three. And three drivers won two races each. John Surtees, Graham Hill, and Dan Gurney, champion on two wheels, also became champion on four wheels. And that would be, of course, John Surtees. On a historical note, Dan Gurney's victory in the French Grand Prix at Rouen, which is the hometown of Pierre Gasly, was the first Grand Prix win for Brabham team. And Mr. Rogers, as a young pup, or lay pup, I understand you spent some time in Rouen also?
Yes, of course. My mom would take me. We would go shopping. And she'd pick up her custom-made shoes at Big Bob's Shoe Stop.
Was it Big Bob or Les Big Bob?
It was Robert.
Okay, good. Okay, I am assuming you were very young, and did you ever get a chance to go to the track, which was a street circuit, by the way, as I'm sure you know?
Yes, my mom noticed that I needed to go pee-pee, and she told me to just go ahead and do it here, because if it was good enough for race cars, it's good enough for you.
There you go, sir. Thanks for such personal details. We appreciate that. Okay, sir, now we come to Denny Hall. In 1967, Denny, driving for Jack Brabham, became the first and so far only Kiwi to win the F1 Drivers' Championship. He was on the podium in 8 of 11 races. Okay, also won the tragic Monte Carlo Grand Prix. In the other garage, the great Jim Clark won four races, but five DNFs derailed his quest for third championship. Sound familiar, Mr. Rose, with the mood? I think Jimmy had so many DNFs because his team owner may have added lightness after building his beautiful Lotus Formula One car. Next, Niki Lauda, 1977. Lauda won three races and took his second championship in 3 years for Ferrari. Mario Andretti should have won the championship that season, but his Lotus let him down many times. He won four races, including the French Grand Prix at Dijon-Prenois, where John Watson's Brabham Alfa Romeo ran out of petrol on the final lap. But, you know, talk about karma. In the previous race at Anderstal, the Swedish Grand Prix, Mario Andretti had a huge lead, and with a few laps to go, his Lotus ran out of juice, handing a very historic win, all French win for Jacques Lafitte and Ligier Matra. And Mr. Rogers, I am very pleased to say I listened to this race live commentary on Radio France International. Of course, in French, those were the days. On a historical note, the season opener in 1977 was very interesting, as Jody Scheckter gave Wolf Racing Team the first F1 victory, their first F1 victory on debut, a feat that will not be matched till JB won the season opener for Brown Racing in 2009. And that Wolf, beautiful, very beautiful looking car, was designed by Dr. Harvey Postlewhite. Moving on, Keke Rosberg, in 1982, five drivers, Alain Prost, René Arnoux, Niki Lauda, John Watson, and Didier Pironi, won twice as many races as the original Flying Finn. Keke Rosberg, he landed his only victory in the Swiss Grand Prix, which was held in France at Dijon-Prenois. The race, for political and patriotic reason, went on for one extra lap than schedule. Easy to understand once you realize who finished second, Le Professeur. And Sir Niki Lauda comes up again in 1984. The season was dominated by the TAG Porsche-powered McLaren team. Prost winning seven races against Take 5 for his teammate Niki. The season went to the final race in Portugal, and Prost lost the title by half a point. Mr. Rogers, there was karma here. Had Jackie X not thrown the red flag at Monaco, Prost would have probably finished second to Ayrton Senna, and the race, had it gone to the full distance, he would have gotten 6 points, and that would have helped his championship cause. Now, this is very interesting as to how good, we talk about who won how many races and who is the greatest. For me, this is what is more important. In one of his books, Niki Lauda, three-time world champion, wrote about Alain Prost, saying that Prost was so quick that no matter what setting he tried, no matter what he did, he just could not beat. Now, I'm using his words, but I'm making it family-friendly. He said, "I could not beat the flipping frog." So, Mr. Prost is a very, very special talent. Whether he has 4 championship or 9 is really not important. Okay, sir? And that's how I feel about Nando also. Famous last words. This is, you know, there are some people who have an opinion on everything. And it's good to have an opinion on everything. Some don't share as freely as this gentleman. And this gentleman is JV, Jacques Villeneuve, on Toto after the season finale in Abu Dhabi last month. And JV thought Lewis was very classy in his demeanor after the race. But about Toto, he said this, and I quote, "Toto's antics were like that of a sore loser playing Monopoly. The moment he is down, he flips the board into the air." End quote. And speaking of games, Mr. Rogers, we come to Musical Mondial. Here is some mighty fine piece of work from Mr. Henry Mancini. Theme from Charade or Charade. Thank you for listening. Please enjoy. Till we meet again next week behind palatial walls. Ciao, ciao.
Good night.